Europe is complicated. Did you know the European Commission president is a bees man? Previously in Europe, the Ohioan Unionist Movement.
Great, and now we're going to talk about European Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker and a series of unusual things he did this week. So he's a podcast favorite, but he's someone I would describe as a weird guy. Juncker is
we are a relatively pro-Juncker podcast.
Yeah, not necessarily for any political reasons. Like, there are things Juncker does that I like, there are things Juncker does that I don't like. However, his, like, general discourse, yeah, he's a joy to watch. His discourse of people is wonderful. My favorite example of all time is when people after the Brexit vote, and it was just, do you think this is going to signal a beginning to for more countries that'll leave the EU? And he just said no, and then left the stage. And then he got an applause as he walked off. That's how you end a press conference. But this week, he's quite slightly perturbed by some press leaks regarding a pesticide legislation that's working its way through the EU at the moment, trying to back up how pro
environment
he is in general, and like the importance of bees to the ecosystem, which I think is like there's like one of the apocalyptic scenarios is all the bees die. And then all of our crops die because the bees pollinate them and there's nothing to replace the bees. And Juncker included the phrase, I'm a bees man. Even though he's allergic to bees, he thinks it's very important to protect them. And he's the best known friend to bees in Luxembourg.
So I really like this concept of like filling in like an OK Cupid profile and just be like, are you a dog person or cat person? And Juncker's just bees. Like, where's the bees option? Other bees.
Yes. On Thursday, he was making some comments relating to Donald Trump and his administration's kind of comments on how they were like pro Brexit at the time, and then Brexit worked out and they were like, well, see, we were right all along, the UK agrees with us. And his response to Trump saying he was a leader on Brexit, Juncker declared that if he keeps talking like this, Juncker will start campaigning for Ohio to become independent and Texas to leave the US. So yeah, Juncker's not afraid to afraid to make wild statements too. Which I think I just like that as a funny concept of just like there's a lot of people in the EU who find it difficult to understand what Juncker's job is specifically, and his response to Trump being ridiculous is to say like, well, I'll make Ohio become independent then and see how you like it.
He's like, Texas, California, too easy.
Ohio's a real challenge for Juncker. So yeah, pro Juncker, not necessarily all the time politically, however, he's delightful.
And now we're going to go back to our reoccurring segment throughout the year, the election section. We finally have a title, and come next recording of the episode, we'll probably forget it. But the election section this year, because there are so many elections this year.
So many elections.
So on March 26th, which was a while ago, there was the Bulgarian general election. We'd covered this to a certain extent before because of how this election came about. It happened on 26th of March 2017, but it was actually scheduled for 2018 initially. The reason these elections were being called was because the presidential elections happened, and the ruling party of Bulgaria didn't get their candidate, voted for as president. So out of a hissy, political hissy fit, Boyko Borisov, the prime minister of Bulgaria, resigned because Tsetska Tsacheva did not make it as president.
Yep.
So the election happened on March 26th, and the results are in. A coalition has not been formed, but there will need to be one. So the current ruling party, or the previously ruling party, got the largest share of seats. They won the plurality of seats out of... I know, right? That's a Scrabble word. I love this party's name. I feel like this is a mistranslation due to like the Cyrillic alphabet, but they're called GERB.
Right, okay.
I think that stands for something, but I like thinking of them as GERB.
Cool.
G-E-R-B. They got 95 seats out of a possible 240. You need 120 for majority. That's up 11 seats from the last parliament.
Hmm.
So this move did kind of pay off for Boyko Borisov, and he's set to be the prime minister again. Mm. He didn't like resign as leader of the party.
Just as dissolve the government kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But a new coalition will probably be formed. Another thing that happened, though, that's worth mentioning is that the classical opposition party, BSP, which are socialists, GERB are center-right, I should say, BSP gained 41 seats.
Mm.
They are now at 80 seats, 15 away from the largest party.
Mm.
Yeah. So it looks like GERB will probably go into a coalition with the United Patriots, which are a liberal democrat centrist party.
Right, okay.
And that will probably... And probably a handful of like smaller parties, independents. Like there's like smattering of like minority rights parties in Bulgaria.
Mm.
So that's likely to be the situation.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Seems like a big swing to other parties, but isn't like not away from the current ruling party. Like there was just the rest of the parliament moved around a lot. That's interesting. Yeah.
A lot of the smaller parties I think lost seats for being kind of ineffectual, or rather people didn't vote for them because they're like, oh, what's the point? They're so small, they'll never be like, they won't be in government in an effective means.
Yes. Yeah, right. Hmm.
Yeah. PSB, by the way, are the party that put forward the winning presidential candidate.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, not like a bad election for them, I guess.
Right? No, gaining 41 seats...
That's, like pretty great. It's just not, like, yeah, the places where they were able to get, like, gain seats were probably helpful for them winning the presidential election, but not, you know, broadly sweeping across the country in a way that actually would give them power.
Yeah, the trend over the last while, according to opinion polls, were that they were gaining popularity.
Yes.
Maybe this was Borisov's plan the whole time, that if he had left the elections to be happening in 2018...
They would continue to gain popularity. Yeah, I see, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But calling them early means that he still gains seats but keeps a narrow lead ahead of them.
Mm.
But they doubled their number of seats.
Right, okay. Sneaky.
Which is quite good. They have a proportional system as well, so there's no, like, electoral mumble-jumbo.
Yes, except for, like, people not understanding the voting system.
Yeah, that's also a possibility.
Oh, no, I don't mean, like, incompetence of voters. I just mean, like, you know, there's election mumbo-jumbo can either mean, like, gerrymandering or, like, weird, confusing structures of constituencies, or it can mean... You have a sufficiently complicated voting system that a lot of the population don't fully understand.
Yeah.
So this is always the thing, like, back where in Ireland, where we're from, is the number of people who you talk to who say, like, oh, I only put my first preference, or, like, I only ever fill, like, maybe my second preference in, whereas we proportional representation, and, like, oftentimes I've worked out in elections that my vote was almost certainly down to my fourth preference.
Right.
Depending on who you're voting for, but like the number of people who just put down like their first preference and just leave it, and that's it.
I always found our system really easy to understand. Like, I mean, for the voter perspective, I know counting it's a bitch, but...
Oh, yeah. No, like I find it easy to understand as well, but like we're a biased population.
Yeah, people who are like...
Like, we're interested in electoral systems as a concept, whereas if the difference is between, like, not voting at all and voting, like... But you're not going to, like, look particularly hard into the voting system. There's a lot of people who put down just their first preference votes. Put down two, and that's it.
I'd like to get the numbers on that from the last election.
I think they were definitely out there. I do remember them, and I remember being kind of like, oh, that hadn't really occurred to me, but I guess it makes sense.
I always thought people would have like been one party loyal, but there's usually like three candidates running for each party in each
seat. A lot of people do that, but in a lot of cases is like they might have two candidates, but one of their candidates get in, one of them has never had a hope, so like your second preference never got used, really.
Anyway, it's interesting.
It is interesting.
But we'll get to that when the inevitable snap elections happen in Ireland.
Looking forward to it.
I know, right?
Oh, God. speaking of snap elections, the this is continuing the aftermath of the Northern Irish elections, where effectively what would have to happen would be there to be another power-sharing agreement between Sinn Féin and the DUP. Where Sinn Féin announced on Monday, I believe, that talks had collapsed and it wasn't going to happen. Which seemed to signal like there was probably going to be another snap election, or something more drastic was going to happen regarding the powers the part of the local parliament has versus Westminster. However, Westminster have come out saying that they are giving them more time to make a deal to try and avoid. Because like the worst situation for everyone is powers that Stormont controls defaulting back to Westminster, because that means Westminster needs to be in control of like regulating the police force in Northern Ireland, which historically is not a job anyone wants, and there's a reason that's given to Stormont, is because this is a very local, very specific matter that needs to be dealt with like a fine brush. And
Northern Ireland is the ultimate special case, like home nation in the UK. It's really so different from the other three.
Yes. So I think like I don't think talks are going to go anywhere. I think politically Sinn Féin have marked this out as a only advantageous to them if it doesn't go well at this stage.
Well, they've drawn the line, which they've done an effective drawing the line where a lot of the population agrees with them, which is they want Arlene Foster to resign.
Yes.
They're happy to go back into power sharing with the DUP as long as it's not under Arlene Foster. Or at least that's what they're saying.
Yeah, see, this is the thing. This is what they're saying, but it's also there's a lot of good political reasons why they would do this.
Oh, totally.
In terms of like power defaulting back to Westminster would basically mean a popularity surge for Sinn Féin, because they were like
Republican sentiment.
It wouldn't appear that this is their fault for not making an agreement if they have specific reasons why they don't want to do it. And like, Arlene Foster being like problematic is the reason there were elections in the first place. So it's, it'll be interesting to watch the next couple of weeks if anything comes through. But my guess is that there will be no agreement. There will be more elections followed by power defaulting back to Westminster.
I'm curious about more elections
at some point.
I'm so curious about that because I feel like Westminster does not want to
deal with that. They're busy, which we'll talk about later, I guess.
And now we go on to Brexit Nonsense 2, Electric Boogaloo. This is probably the big resurgence of Brexit nonsense since the actual vote itself.
Yes.
Because Article 50 has been triggered. I believe that's the accepted wording for it now. Which means that the process is underway. So not an awful lot in practical terms happened this week because of the triggering of it, but a lot of rhetoric and debates happened, and some interesting quotes from interesting people, as well as a fair amount of movement in Scotland. Yes. Scotland is actually where the most practical stuff happened.
Yes, the actual practical stuff relating to Article 50 was a letter was handed to the EU.
It was from Theresa May to Donald Tusk.
Yes, and so that's officially happening now. I think a lot of the rhetoric news falls under what I would refer to as not news at all. Because it was very much like there was scraps of information to be had. This was like, in a lot of ways, a formality that had to be done.
Yeah.
Downing Street were trying to downplay the importance of this in a lot, like, from what I could gather, in a lot of ways, because they don't want to draw attention to, like, a big grandstanding moment when they actually want to just start having negotiations. At this point, like, as in, this is them setting a date and triggering this is a, we think we're, like, enough in line to start negotiations and we want them to start immediately because it's a fixed time thing and this is eating up all of our political capital in perpetuity. So let's start and start doing it before it becomes more of a problem.
I mean there's like a lot of, I will admit, I went through a lot of this news and I did not submit a lot of the stuff that I found because I would agree with you. I think it kind of verges on kind of
a lot of it was picking where, like specific wording from the triggering letter, which in itself isn't really, it wasn't that long, but it was picking on it as like, oh, Theresa May is signaling that she's threatening that if the EU don't give them a good deal there'll be like security problems and stuff, and it's like, I don't think like the is this the avenue you'd make such a threat really? Also, yeah, like they're, this like is immediately denied by everyone involved, and there's some like discussion of it, and people's responses are like, well, if the UK were to threaten us, that would be ridiculous for the following reasons, and just it's not.
Yeah, it that was probably the one that caused the most like fear-mongering hubbub, like yes. Francois Fillon actually like commented on it and everything, was shocked by the implied wording of the Brexit letter. And
yeah, well, of there course. Was... Yeah, well, he's shocked trying to make this more important than his many, many scandals. So, like, at this stage, Fionn comedy on stuff is also what I would class as not important.
That's a fair point. Become president and then we'll talk.
Just get to the second round and then, like, the stuff you say can be relevant again, but I just...
We dredge it all back up.
Yeah, we're just... But like, we'll start talking about your scandals again, I imagine, because that's all the pen will be talking about if he gets to the second round.
Yeah, oh God. Anyway, moving away from the French election, because it is gobbling up our
quagmire
lives.
Yeah.
So that was a relative hubbub, and there was, like, a handful of security experts talking about... that there was, I think, probably the most legitimate thing that came out of it were the fears of the UK crashing out of the European Union and what that would mean for things like Europol and various like security mechanisms that the EU have like put in place.
Yeah, I think it's kind of like the useful thing that came out of this discussion was that exactly, was like, okay, what if there's no deal? Here are some actual practical implications of if there is no continuity plan for things that people don't think about, like European wide police agreements and stuff, things that are
intelligence sharing as well,
yeah, that are kind of dependent on the way the EU is structured and aren't things that anyone in the UK government really wants to get rid of. Like,
no,
they don't want to pull out completely of Europol. It's actually quite convenient if there's someone the UK are trying to track that gets out of the country, they can share police intelligence for that. It's uncontroversial things that the UK would like to keep, and it's kind of like if the Brexit negotiations are like are a massive disaster, this is why it would be a problem. But I feel like that's not the problem people were latching at for, like, Theresa May threatening people.
No.
I don't think Donald Tusk would disagree that, you know, them prioritizing things that they can both agree on as, like, taking them off the table as bargaining chips and just say, like, oh, we agree this is fine, right? Sure, let's move on.
Okay, so we'll go through some other stuff that happened.
Sure.
Most of these are, like, quotes and rhetoric and analysis.
Mm.
Because basically... the conversation has just come up again, is a lot of what's happening. But fun quote from Nigel Farage, I will go and live abroad. I'll go and live somewhere else if Brexit turns out to be a disaster.
Yeah. I don't mean to repeat myself, but Nigel Farage commenting on things to me is no longer news.
It is to a lot of people, and that's scary. Moving on from that. Analysis seems to be pointing to the European Parliament as being the bad cop in a lot of the negotiations, which on a practical sense makes a lot of sense because they are like okay, the parliament is one institution, but it's 750 MEPs of varying parties, of varying languages, of varying national, regional, like, interests. So, yeah, it's going to be a problematic voice. The quotes and the words seem to be coming out of the European Parliament officially is that they're going to stop anything that looks like it's going to attack the European Union's core principles. Mm. So it's probably like the four freedoms and things like that.
Yeah.
What else was there? Comments and debates in the German Parliament. Main takeaways from that were Angela Merkel was very clear that, or she was indeed very clear, that we're going to be negotiating your terms of departure. We're not going to be discussing, like, the future of the relationship until you're out.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Yeah. Which is in line with what they've been saying, which makes sense. It's not, they didn't, you know.
It's not a ridiculous claim. Yeah.
No, they didn't wildly go off script when the actual Article 50s thing was triggered. They didn't suddenly go, everything we've said in the past, no. Crazy new policy.
What else? The German Parliament had a couple of quotes, or kind of key points from their debate. They're very insistent that the EU will speak as one voice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the remaining 27 members will represent their interests together. Mm. They will not be doing trade deals on behalf of London in the future.
Yeah.
Kind of against an EEA kind of.
Yes.
Might be signaling towards that.
Yeah.
They are going to try and make sure conditions in Europe improve for everyone, kind of noting that there's like a disillusionment with Europe, so that needs to be addressed.
Mm-hmm.
They send a message to Irish politicians and Irish people that they will stand by their side regardless of the border issues.
Yep.
Which I thought was kind of odd to hear at a national parliament that's not Ireland. And they also commented on the supposed threats in Theresa May's letter. So there you go.
Yeah, well, I feel like they wouldn't have brought that up if there hadn't been like a media furor about it. I think
that's possibly true. Yes, yeah.
I think it was a this is the problem of stuff like this. And like if there's a slow news day, but you're like, well, artificially it's being triggered. That's a big deal. There wasn't anything interesting in this except for these lines we could, you know, big up a bit, and then suddenly everyone has to talk about it, and that's the news for the day.
Yeah, it's a soundbite kind of thing.
Yes.
Let's see what else. German Finance Minister Wolfgang Schäuble said that it doesn't want to punish Britain, but it needs to prevent other members from following it out the door.
Yes.
So it's again not from left field.
Mm-hmm.
The European Council said that. They will be considering Spain's position regarding any deal with revolving around Gibraltar.
Yeah.
Which has gotten a lot of people in Britain very scared and think it's going to be a new Falklands. I say it probably won't be. But
if Britain and Spain go to war over Gibraltar, I will have some follow-up questions for both governments.
I mean, like, it's an interesting situation because something that I was talking to family in Spain about is that loads of people who are like Gibraltar citizens, British citizens and stuff, or people who work in Gibraltar don't live in Gibraltar because there's no room left anymore.
No, it's a very small like piece of land, really.
Mm. And they have to accommodate for the businesses that operate out there for like online gambling and things like that.
Yeah,
so
yeah, right.
Once you do all that, how much space do you have for people to live?
So true. So true.
The Council President Donald Tusk, this was the last piece of rhetoric, said that any free trade agreement with the UK must ensure a level playing field in terms of competition and state aid and must encompass safeguards against unfair competitive advantages through inter alia fiscal, social and environmental dumping.
Yeah.
Basically, gist of that was that he was very much shutting down the supposed Singapore model that was talked about in the British press a bit, and they were like, no free trade deals happening if you attempt to become a turbo tax haven.
Yes, exactly, which is like an old argument from especially conservative politicians is, oh, we can just like zero out our corporation tax. I mean, you can do, and like effectively you do a lot anyway due to a lot of companies not paying corporation tax.
Yep.
However, if you make that your official policy, that's like public and doesn't matter who the corporation is to like entice in new business, why would the EU want to do like a free trade with agreement with you if it having such a free trade agreement is just gonna is effectively just going to lure jobs to you and not give them any benefit?
It would hollow out Europe basically.
Yeah, which would be the idea. But I guess like the argument from the UK's point of view is like, well, doesn't Luxembourg kind of does this to an extent? There's like the
yeah, but like with all this stuff, like London does it as well, Dublin does it as well. This stuff, it's like not the official position. And if you're caught, there's like attempts to stop it. They're slow attempts, and sometimes they're not as effective as some people would like. But it's not like anyone's official position.
It's not the universal position. It's not like the across the board, but it's like, here's our tax rate, but we're open to negotiating it with you. Anyway, it
upsets me somewhat. But yeah, that was the Brexit nonsense. Hopefully more concrete stuff will be happening as actual practical actions and negotiations start to happen.
I'd quite like it to be quiet for a while, to be honest.
I would too, but that's probably not going to be the reality. Previously in Europe is produced by Kieran Dold and Hugh O'Brien. This week's song was Stoned in Paradise by Mokesh from Italy. You can listen to them on SoundCloud. If you like this podcast, please tell a friend about it. That kind of stuff can help a lot. And if you don't have any friends, I'm sorry, but you can also go onto iTunes and give us a 5-star review. That will also help. And I'm really sorry about that no friends comment. Thanks for listening.